Okay, well, today is Thursday the 11th, and it's around 11. I'm talking, actually 11:15 or so, 11:20. I'm talking with activist Brent Adams, who works with the Warming Center and a variety of other projects, as regular listeners well know. Hi, Brent.
Hi.
And it's been a sort of a sparse season for the Warming Center. You've been open only a few times, right?
Yeah, we've been open, I think, four times in Watsonville and two in Santa Cruz. We could have been open maybe three based on weather conditions in Santa Cruz, but it's we've spoken before, the temperature, our activation threshold is rather aggressive at 35 degrees, and including extreme rain, which means these are forecasts, not actual temperatures, and then forecasted rain amounts of an inch in a day, or three quarters in 2 days, or half inch 3 days. We haven't reached those forecasts at all. In fact, the forecasts have been all above 40 degrees. We haven't seen a forecast in downtown Santa Cruz, according to the weather station on Weather Underground, high atop the Cruz Isle building, below 40 degrees yet, although actual temperatures likely have been colder than that.
Yeah, I mean, you're also the person who was contracted to do a storage program beginning in December, and you've explained this to us in the past, how that for some reason it wasn't entirely clear was then sort of slipped away from you. Any further updates on that, and also what people are doing to store their stuff?
No real updates. I think the city and I have been playing nice about it. I don't really know I know that, as we've said before, they're out on a limb with this encampment in San Lorenzo Park. These are people who have little background in homelessness. I think Susie O'Hara had a lot to do with the DAP program. It was finally
PACT. It was called the PACT program.
Program that was shown to have very little effect relating to that they increased incarceration for these people that they said they wanted to help, and ended up costing more than it would have if they didn't have the program at all, with very little effect. So,
and yet
now they've decided to refund the thing. The only reason I mention it is these are people still clinging to Housing First, permanent support housing. This sort of myth that a lockdown encampment at 1220 River Street is going to have some better effect than what we've seen all over the Northwest is what we call sanctuary type camps.
Before you go on, Brent, let me interrupt you because I want to stop and kind of go into this PAC thing briefly because, as you pointed out, or I think you referenced, at City Council 2 days ago, they had a special item on the agenda after having cut other social service programs, such as yours, which is, you know, the storage program. They were going to, you know, expend more funding to go after, they're claiming it's really is for serial alcohol inebriates of a certain limited kind that, and this is my view of it, and I haven't got a lot of documentation, but maybe you can comment on it, has to do with people who are eyesores in the downtown or multiple arrests, and it has to do often with arrests that aren't even for really heavy nuisance infractions. I tried to get from Susie O'Hara a few days ago a listing because she was citing, 200 people are responsible for 2,000 arrests or some such thing. And I said, not that the PACT has ever dealt with 200 people, but what were those infractions that they were in fact arrested for? And I haven't yet gotten an answer. Any comments on any of that?
Well, I know two of the individuals personally who were the poster people, and they were literally of 10 or 12 people 4 years ago that were posted on the front of the Sentinel, their photographs, their mug shots, identified as chronic inebriates, people who are the high contact individuals downtown. And I understand the desire. That's the Malcolm Gladwell $1 million Murray concept, that a few people are costing all of the money, and how do we help them? And that's a really great endeavor. But the way to help them is not massive incarceration of somebody who has an alcohol addiction, you know, that is in plain view. It is just so wrongheaded, such a disgusting waste of money. And what I'm believing right now is that they're, again, they're desperately trying to, they're behind the ball here. They're late in planning this new encampment, and I think they're trying to pick any bit of money that they can and piece it together in a way to fund this new endeavor. It's going to be quite costly, and they're going to be desperate to show results. I think we really need to pay attention to this, Robert. It's not a sanctuary-type camp. It is going to be, but it is something audacious, like the encampment in San Lorenzo Park, that the city is going to host its own encampment with many programs bringing to bear and a security guard and shuttle program so that people can't get there. I want to, like, constantly couch it in positive terms because I besides the fact that I feel, yeah, you know, the sour grapes and butt hurt that they're not going towards a sanctuary-type camp that I've been focusing on for years, they're sidestepping that constantly, and now they're doing this other thing. But I really want to see it go well, but we really have to watch it along the way because they're...
Well, it sounds like it's...
They're doing this kind of on their own, the Susie O'Hara mavericking with Tina Shaw. They're not bringing in the city council.
Brent, it sounds like
how ineffective the city council is.
It sounds like they are. Brent, let me interrupt here because it sounds like they are doomed to fail to begin with. Because, I mean, even in your attempt to sort of give a cast a hopeful light on this by saying that that you're using your words are revealing and that you're saying you can walk to San Lorenzo Park, but they're going to require you to shuttle out to this program. Do I understand that's what their plan is? That's what I read somewhere.
That's the San Diego model, and the San Diego model was borrowed from the Seattle model, which is awesome. The Seattle and Eugene model should be studied in-depthly here in Santa Cruz because we have similar problems. But what they did in San Diego was a desperate attempt. A fast break to get 200, 300 people off the street because they were getting many, many deaths attributed to hepatitis A. So that's a hepatitis A camp. They plunked it down in an NIMBY area, so they had to use the shuttle method, and that was novel, appreciable. But then they did the extraneous, the next weird thing of, searching people's belongings and having a security guard posted. That's the type of thing that they did in San Diego because it was a city that doesn't have a lot of background or trust in, like when you, I'll just always compare the warming center to the winter shelter. It's a little apples and oranges because we're not open very much, but we never check a person's backpack and we don't treat it like a lockdown facility. We give people a lot of respect and show them dignity. And when you do that, you get return. The dividends in return are a much more positive populations, people who are working with you instead of against you.
And also, I mean, people will use the facility. I mean, let's even look at San Lorenzo Park, where you don't have to, get a pat-down search every time you come in. Admittedly, you pointed out that some of the rangers are not respecting the privacy of folks in tents as much as they might be.
I'm gonna come off that. I think I've been doing a lot of study. There's a lot of, there's so much freedom down there that you can be a junkie, in plain view, a using junkie. So there's a lot of freedom down there.
Right, but it's that being the case, people will use the facilities, let's say, in ways that they, and you can also store your stuff there during the day, in ways that they don't use the Association of Faith Communities program, or similarly, I would imagine the warming center, when it's open, you don't have the facilities to store stuff during the day, for instance.
That's correct. So, there's a lot to be said for all of this. We could talk probably all day long around this. I direct people to the KION video yesterday. It's on their website. Look for the Benchlands video on their website. You can see that they went into the encampment and did some questioning some people, including Chief and some other people we know, Gary Chief. But you ask anybody down there, And almost all of them will say they will not be utilizing this encampment that's being planned. The question is, I think what you want to do is work with the population. Really, I got to be careful because I want to work with the city. I want to be there ready when they're ready, finally, whenever that moment arises when we can work together on a sanctuary-type camp or other programs. I had a budding nonprofit that wants to engage with this community. And if I'm constantly being snarky, but we got to say that, I'll double back and say, let's pay attention to this thing that the city's doing. Let's hold out some hope because I think they're being adventuresome. They're being innovative in some ways, in ways that we've never seen in Santa Cruz. We can call attention to lots of things that have been done, but if they really want to try to use this, collaborate between the city and county, bring all those county programs to bear finally, and wrap around services to people in an encampment who are willing to sign an agreement and be in that space, if they can fill it up, and those people are our people from Santa Cruz, not recently arrived from another town, and that's another conversation, then let's hope for the best. That's all I can say.
You can hope for the best, Brent, and you will, and I think your trouble is you're on the fence. You have to deal with these both sides as you see it. But, when you look at the fact that they're cramming people into a gravel-strewn, flood-likely area that's half the size of San Lorenzo with security guards and shuttles, I mean, I think it's doomed to fail. But, it'll probably help a few people,
But look, that's a place that I was suggesting that we do an actual sanctuary camp, not with guards, not potentially with shuttles, but... you could put platforms there. You could put appropriate shelter there.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
At low cost. It's not a bad location if you provide transportation. That's what the shuttle is. But if you turn it into a lockdown facility that people cannot come and go without the shuttle, that creates a little different sort of vibe.
I'm
saying it's in the details, the nuance of the thing.
I hear you, and I think you're right on that. But I think... this gets back to a sort of a deeper issue, which has to do with freedom versus sort of social service management. And, I had a long conversation with activist Peter Marin of Santa Barbara about the destruction of single-room occupancy hotels and what I'm going to be playing, I think, on this program later today called Hobohemia. That is to say, there used to be, you may be familiar with this term, there used to be cheap hotels that people who were drunks or who were users could crash in. Then they could go out, they'd be sober for a while, do some work, get some money, and then, get back to whatever lifestyle they had, whether it was alcoholic or drug activated. And it wasn't regarded as some sort of, it was regarded as a sin and lazy and bummy and so forth, but it was the reality for a lot of people. Particularly, between the Civil War and the 1930s, maybe even to the 1970s. And what you did was you had a place where people could go and they could, they could be themselves, do what they do, and continue. They became, sections of town were like this. And then you suddenly got this, after World War II, you got this expansion of housing, and it now is a contraction of housing, of course, it no longer exists. And you had this, this is sort of the managers moved in and the social service people who suddenly wanted to improve everybody's lives. And not that that is necessarily a bad thing, but the reality also is it really cuts into people's freedom. And what you have in Santa Cruz and among homeless people, and this is often a criticism that I've had levied against me as an activist, is that, they draw these distinctions, the homeless by choice and the homeless by disability. And, I went off and says, there are many people who won't admit they're disabled, that they really are, and they really would rather have housing and housing. But in reality, what you have to do is address where people are at now. And I think that's one of the things that, even though you seem to be looking for a way forward from this through the model that you have, investigated and are pressing for, you also recognize that people are what they are right now. And you go to great lengths, and this puts you perhaps at peril with the think correctly, politically correct authorities by saying there are people who use heroin, there are people who use meth, in everyday life, and they still survive, and they still live with other people, and that's how it is. And
yeah.
And so that is how it is. That's what's going on now. Any reports from San Lorenzo Park about how things are going there? I mean, I Jessica York cites two overdoses, although there have been, I'm sure there are plenty of overdoses last, you know, year before last when there wasn't an established San Lorenzo Park encampment for some people.
Yeah, there are a total of five, actually, in the last 6 months.
And but how did that compare, let's say, with the year before? Any sense of that?
No idea, because they were all over town, not in San Lorenzo Park, right? So mm-hmm. when people are brought together, I mean, I would have to assert that I think people in that encampment, some of them have moved out of housing because it was easy to be close to the drug that they want and the community using and purchasing drugs that they want. That's what I've seen.
People have told you that.
Yeah, quite a few. In fact, you see several of them moving back and forth to housing and the encampment at will. And their friends, their Santa Cruz townies from back in the day, and they have a support network that visits them in the camp, makes purchases. There's a lot of, you know, it's a big black market thing. We don't want to highlight it too much. But at the same time, we have to say that's what's happening. That camp is not the same. The distinction of the people who are in the doorways in downtown, completely different population, in completely different ways to address that population. Then the people in Harvey West, completely different population. People on the extreme west side, completely different population. But in the encampment, I was there, you know, we did the extreme rain event warming center that was on Monday night. And then we reached out to people in Harvey West and reached out to people in the encampment and, of course, all over downtown. What we saw was all the people in the doorways downtown, that's our population for the warming center, they all came in. Not one person from the encampment got on the shuttle when we drove there. We let them know days in advance we would do it. We called out. They literally were in their tents in standing water. Unbelievable circumstances. To this moment, I still can't understand how, other than being completely chemically altered, to tolerate that sort of thing. Additionally, we drove up to the Harvey West. People were quite happy to be under really drippy rain tarps, but it's a conversation about addiction and mental health. Mainly addiction in that case.
What is what's the situation for the San Lorenzo Park people in and after the rain? Are they? Did you spend much time there? When were you last there?
All day. I was there several times yesterday. Uh-huh. Till the evening, I served 3 gallons of soup, gave 50 blankets away, and dozens of coats, shoes, clothing. And we waited for that. It's kind of a jerk move that we stayed away the day immediately after. Of course, I had to get some sleep after the warming center. But the at 3 a.m., the night of the deluge, I drove down there on a break from the warming center to see that they were actually, the tents were in pools of water, which means inside of the tent they had standing water at 6 inches around, you know, and so people were literally in water, but they remained there. So the next day, you had yesterday, piles and piles of wet blankets, futons, you know, sleeping bags, clothing, and then the city finally came through, picked it all up, brought it down to the dumpster, and that's why we came through later to replenish the blankets.
Mm-hmm.
But what you saw is just like a lot of people with soaked clothing. It's this weird thing around, you know, we've created a leper's colony down there, essentially. It's similar to that. They're kind of isolated. Many of them don't leave there. People bring food in, you know, all the beautiful people, the churches, Latinos from Watsonville come in a couple times a week and bring plates of food. We're serving soup from time to time. You see, you know, grandmothers down there with sandwich bags. It's amazing. but it's a crisis situation, and I really would like, it's fascinating to stand by and watch the city do these things. Isn't it? You and I have been, you know, kind of on the scene. You're twice as long as I have to watch the city kind of manage this camp with park rangers driving up and down, walking up and down constantly, waking people up with the words, is everybody still alive in there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, with no sense of irony. And then, you know, telling them that they have to break the tent down and citing them if they don't break the tent down. And but now they don't even write citations for syringes. You see syringes all over the place when you walk through there on the ground. It's just, it's maddening. We can do this. It just takes some understanding, some will, some management. It takes, I believe it takes a community entity. I wish I had complete open time on my hands so I could just be down there. But, you know, who's really going to do that? Just spend all their time. It's not welcome either. You can't go down there and even be a member of that encampment and try to encourage people to clean up, because people get pissed off. You know, they don't like bureaucracies. They don't like authoritarian figures. They don't like... the only thing they respond to is respect, you know, people treating them well, being generous with them, accepting them as they are is the main thing.
Well, Brent, isn't this sort of similar, again, going back to the Hobohemia model of, you know, decades ago, where people... want to live their own lives. That's their. They want to be treated like human beings. They're not, you know, they may or may not decide they want to quit alcohol or get religion or quit heroin or quit meth, but they, you know, their primary needs are to be left alone and to find shelter and sort of get basic needs met. And if you try to tie that to a demand that they engage in a kind of social service upgrade... And unfortunately, that's what both social service, what you're doing, as well as what, you know, city authorities are doing for different reasons. And also, you know, obviously with different hold modus operandis there.
Yeah.
You know, it's to me, I mean, I've always been concerned about the existence of people where they're at. And so, for example, I was listening to a conversation 27 years ago I had on KSCO where I was attacked by Carolyn Boozenhart, who is a member of a group called Take Back the Town, which was a sort of a predecessor to Take Back Santa Cruz. I don't know if you remember it.
It's well documented in Paul Lee's book.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, she was saying that we were enabling the homeless. She didn't use the word enabling. It wasn't that wasn't what they used in those days. I don't know, promoting or endorsing homelessness. And the answer, no, is you endorse people's basic right to be, and that becomes the issue. And that I don't see anybody really doing. I mean, you know, you see the ACLU-ish type, not really our ACLU, but in different areas where the ACLU is actually defending the right of people to have their own property without it being stolen, or, you know, to be able to, I don't know if they're defending privacy in tents or anything, or it's not happening in terms of, I'm a throwback here and saying you're not going to get single room occupancy again. You're not going to have, you know, slum hotels that people can use if they need to use them, and people need something. It sure as hell better than being busted by the police running all over town or trying to wedge yourself into programs that will throw you out, you know, if you do three missteps.
Yeah. I think we take this... people are at the lowest common space that they can possibly get to when they're in a homeless circumstance, sleeping in doorways, not having a place to go to the bathroom, difficulty bathing, all the things, no access to laundry unless you have, you know, $8 for coins, which are, that money's going to go to hydrating and food and you know, the addiction. The reason I mention this is, as a community, as a society that we have, you would raise the floor of experience to a more dignifying level. But what we do is we blame people experiencing homelessness for their experience. Last night, there was a Dominican, a man in a wheelchair, elderly, in a smock with no pants on. You could see the person's ass. They wheeled him down to the bus stop on Soquel at 12 in the morning with no jacket and left him there. I don't know what circumstances are. This is a person I've been watching, been staying in at the CVS in the Metro bus stop enclosure. We're trying to work with Chris Youngland to find some... the person, they apparently arrived here from Monterey. Sometimes they're nonverbal. Sometimes they're very verbose. It's very bizarre. But that person checked themselves into Dominican yesterday And then they were kicked out without their medication and the personal belongings, only the wheelchair. And a sheriff's deputy called me at about 12:30 in the morning last night to see if we had shelter. And I had to, school. I'm like, there is no shelter, actually. The last opportunity for shelter was at 5:30 p.m. Intake at the winter shelter. We were not open because it wasn't cold enough. But warming center, or I have a van full of blankets, and the only human answered phone hotline in the county. So you put those two together, and then I'm the person that comes out like an ambulance with warm clothing and blankets, which we did. And the person, I was, putting the pants on around this guy who's extra large, XXX, and I really couldn't believe I was looking at a man's private sitting in a wheelchair. They got him in a sheriff's vehicle and met me back down at CVS because that's where the person had identified as their home. The reason I mention it is because this person, their experience is so degraded and minimal, and we have so little to offer this person as a community. And, people have mentioned Adult Protective Services. I'm going to make that call soon. Chris Younger, and I guess she's been looking into this. She's the downtown outreach worker, empowered by Encompass with funding from the city and the county, I believe. But we're very limited tools. So the reason I mention, again, is that if we as a community would empower a nonprofit like Warming Center to create a sanctuary-type camp, dignifying spaces where we accept people as they are, realize if you improve their lateral conditions, they'll vastly improve their behaviors and begin to get some traction on their life. That's why I really want to see, like, the downtown streets team matched with this sort of encampment thing they're designing. I really want to hold out the best hope for it, and we'll be watching closely.
But how can you accept people as they are, even in a sanctuary camp that's run by people like, let's say, Mike Zint used to be involved with a camp called First They Came for the Homeless in Berkeley, now split into three camps that are, operating pretty well, and actually their example and their resistance to authority, their protest camps partially for disabled people who are in the camps. They kind of split into three different functions, according to what I heard most recently. But, they have this no hard drug rule, which is not going to address people who are living in other encampments. And your sanctuary village and camp couldn't do that either, based upon the rules, partially because, some people are trying to recover and it's not a good idea to mix those groups. But partially because you're appealing to a middle-class mentality that doesn't appreciate, understand, or tolerate visible drug use. So they're just fine if you do it hiding in your house,
Yeah. Or, we have not yet had the conversation that we would like to have around sanctuary-type camp. Encouraging people to see that there's a space where they can finally experiment with sobriety. Many of the conversations I have, even with the people in the encampment, San Lorenzo Park Benchlands, express they hate this life. They need a change, but there's no way to do it. That's their story. There may be ways to do it if they can, connect the dots and do an arduous thing to get to treatment. But if there's no place for them to emerge to, they're back on the street. So the idea that a sanctuary camp gives some of these people an opportunity to experience, go through a detox program, then come back out to a sanctuary camp. Or a sanctuary camp will have a program that makes sure that everyone gets to their methadone every day and gets to NA or whatever they need to do. But the other conversation is you create a possibility for people to game the system. And they can game the system. That's appropriate. Meaning no use of drugs or alcohol within the space. That means we can't see it. We don't want to see a syringe. We don't want to see alcohol. But if you're acting okay, that's the way it is in our society. Many of us are medicated all around us at Safeway, at the donut shop, in our neighborhoods, in our homes. As long as people are acting okay and there's no repeated disruptions, like another rule of the sanctuary camp, You can do it. So there's that a gray area, but the additionally what you and I want to talk about is, what about a space where we know...
Brent, you still there?
Safe injection sites, you know, syringe exchange, and all the tools that the county and all the mega nonprofits can get to rain on people who are living an addictive lifestyle, treating them with respect and dignity, and then maybe they can begin to see other possibilities for themselves, rather than criminalizing them constantly, judging them, turning them into and calling them addicts, and stamping their head with the A, you know, the scarlet letter.
I think, though, that, you know, a lot, some of this, some of the addiction, these problems come from more basic forces in the society that are not changing yet, and that can't be changed without some profound, basic, fundamental economic and social changes that don't have to do with, you know, like setting up, you know, small band-aids or even, you know, helpful sanctuary camps. I mean, you know, and until that happens, what do you do to not just protect the rights of the people who are outside? Oh, you want to protect the right of people to be out in the rain, that sort of thing. No, but protect the rights of people to shelter themselves, even if they're using, and things of that sort. And that isn't something that, you know, anyone is really talking about.
What does that look like to you?
I don't know. I just know that it's obvious that it's a real need. It's a real reality throughout not just Santa Cruz, but throughout cities up and down the coast. And that
I wonder what shelters themselves. I mean, what you're seeing along Highway 1 between River Street and High Street now are people sheltering themselves with tarps in the mud along fencing, you know, behind granite construction and all these places there. Is that what you mean by sheltering themselves?
I suppose, you know, we're using structures or squatting or whatever they're doing in vacant buildings. I mean, you know, as I said, it used to be, I understand, more like single room occupancies or hobo camps. Now it's, you know, that's not acceptable anymore because everyone's supposed to pretend that, you know, they can move into some reasonable situation or else they have a moral defect or else they're at a disability or they're addicts can't follow rules. There's a whole series of excuses middle-class people use to dehumanize people who are outside, which I think, you know, there's some truth in it in a certain way, but not in the basic way that such characterizations are imposed. So, I mean, I'm looking at the city manager's report. Did you look at the report at the city council meeting on Tuesday? I don't know if you saw that.
Nope.
Yeah, it probably wasn't. Yeah. I don't know if it's worth looking at it. I can't get the video or the audio of the council meeting. I've talked to the city about it. Can't do it yet, even though it's supposedly online. But there was a long report from the city manager saying they're going to have to hold off. You probably saw the story in today's Sentinel, perhaps?
Nope.
Yeah, well, you're missing all the best news sources there, Brent. You know, that they're going to have to postpone the San Lorenzo camp deportation activity or shrinkage that they're going to try to do, which is to what? Shoehorn already limited numbers of people into a much smaller space out at, 1220 River Street?
What's the reason given? They haven't got it together yet?
Well, let me see. I'm looking at this. They're working to develop...
Their timeline is ludicrous. It would have been challenging for anybody to do it, even the city.
Well, let me read it. City working with the county. Oh, they're blaming the county, of course, to develop permanent day use, year-round facilities. This is going to involve transitional facilities, leased buildings, temporary use of buildings. In other words, this is all there. We're planning this and we're planning that. All phases leading to and including navigation center provide homeless clients their first step to exit homelessness. Again, the fantasy of getting people to exit homelessness. Can happen in some cases, but isn't, you know, it's not unlikely to happen on a broad basis.
It didn't happen in San Francisco, and no one talks about it.
Yep, that's the phony navigation center stuff. Yeah. Navigation centers are better than shelters, but, you know, only for a limited period of time anyway.
Yeah, they kick people right back out to the street.
Right. Temporary tent facilities have identified the vacant city parcel on River Street as a preferred site. I'm reading from the website of the city manager's presentation. City staff team focused on the implementation, which follows the San Diego model you were talking about, which is the hepatitis A model. Goals to implement as soon as possible. Again, they're getting vague. Working with San Diego's Alpha Project and local partners on identifying an operator and site preparation. That was the reason Jessica York in her article today said that they were having problems, was because they got, everybody is willing to help out, but nobody wants to take responsibility. This could be a big opportunity for you, Brent.
You know, it would turn, it would probably turn me into the type of monster that I don't want to be.
Yep.
But
I
would,
so.
I would consider it.
Well, don't consider it too long. I like talking to you as you are, no matter though we may disagree on numerous things. Then they cite San Diego model, highly managed facility, on-site health and human services, 24-hour security. In other words, all these nice little ads for something that I haven't been to San Diego. I take it you probably haven't either and seen this model. But you
know, I spent a great deal of time in San Diego a year ago summer, and they have a huge homelessness encampment problem there.
Well, they also have, you know, they had the reality of the Spencer decision, which supposedly ended the police ability to harass people at night for sleeping. Although I don't know how, did you notice that
they do a lot of camp movement. You know, that's what they do all over now. They allow people to congregate for 3 weeks or a month or so, and then they do a big move, camp move, and that's kind of what you're seeing in Sacramento, San Francisco, San Jose, wherever they allow people to encamp in Santa Cruz benchlands too. I think that's going to be the new normal, that we're going to be seeing encampments all over the place, but or wherever they allow them, and then every few weeks they're just going to, you know, come down hard on them. They're not going to criminalize anybody unless they see stuff, but. Continue for the what you're reading. I'm sorry.
Right, no, that's good. I'm glad you brought that up. I think those are pertinent points. And in reference to what you said, and I'll finish the city manager's report in a moment, or at least what his visual presentation of it. But that's what Mills apparently did up in Eugene. He moved.
Eureka.
Sorry, quite right.
Yeah.
Eureka. He moved them, homeless people, from an encampment that was downtown. It was called the Pasco Encampment or some such thing.
Yeah, it was behind the Costco or something, the Home Depot, huge area.
And he moved them to a parking lot somewhere for it was a relatively long period of time, 6 months, and then he moved them again. And that, I haven't been able to find out where he moved them to. When I asked him about this in an email, he ducked the question, or at least he has not answered it yet. By the way,
they didn't move them. They shut all areas down and people dispersed into the larger community.
That's what they did. Okay, interesting. Yes. Interesting. By the way, he's coming on the air. Malkin's doing an interview with him on KZSC, John Malkin, the Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster and occasional writer for Good Times and other publications, and former Citizens Police Review Board.
When is that going to be?
Right now, starting at 12, going to 1. It's on KZSC. In fact, if you want to listen to it, we can kind of postpone the rest of this interview until later, and I can get an update from you tomorrow or the next day. We can kind of
they're playing radio currently on KZSC music.
Oh well, maybe coming on. It's not quite 12 o'clock, so maybe that it's about to come on. I think that's what he told me, from 12 to 1.
Yeah, I got 2 more minutes here.
I think that's right. I may be a day off though. That's possible, and I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to anyway. So, the final thing for the final part of this report, it looks like they're just trying to say, we're doing all these things. We're responding to a public health emergency. Pushing people out with no place to go will not serve them or the community. The same thing we've said for years. But now what they're saying is they're doing it because they can't. They don't know what to do next. And we're tackling a complicated issue and moving forward deliberately, gaining knowledge even with setbacks. It's a bunch of rhetorical bullshit. So there isn't much in this report that talks about concrete things, overarching considerations, having a place to go, is making a tangible positive difference, ask for the community's patience and support. Most people don't have a place to go. If the community is giving patience and support, it's independently of the city often, although there's some, you know, obviously, you know, I guess Parks and Rec Rangers are... They're emptying the porta potties, what, twice a week now or something like that? I don't know.
No, they have two... They have a total of 4 of them, and they're rotated. So they're not. It's weird because since they had 2 and 2, they're on different schedules. Isn't that bizarre that a truck would come out and only empty 2 of 4 of them, and then come back a few days later and empty the other 2? They might as well just empty all 4 of them every time.
Of course,
it's crazy to me, but that's what we're seeing.
You know, it's,
I think it's on average about probably 4 out of 7 days they're being cleaned.
Right.
Which is not bad. It's not good, especially for that level of use, but it's not the worst.
I mean, I tend to cynically think about the this city manager's report. What they want to keep doing is they want to keep funding the same committees, the same managerial staff at the same exalted levels, probably not that exalted, but, you know, in the sense that it costs a huge amount of money to live in Santa Cruz if you want to, you know, have any kind of, you know, luxuries or comforts. But it's exalted in terms of the needs that people have who are outside, you know, and the most obvious thing they need. I mean, so, yeah, that's all I've got. I'd like to see more, but I'm not being able to access it on my computer.
Well, you know what's really fascinating is, you remember there's a, we talked about it before, this small sort of tiny house thing out that Mount Calvary Lutheran that was the holdover from the...
Camp Paradise.
Yeah, so years later. And they're still there. And recently they were acknowledged by at the Smart Solutions to Homelessness Award Ceremony. Which is, you know, the strangest, you know, pendulum swing of all, where they had to literally hide in the trees there, try to, you know, low profile. They didn't want anybody to know about it, and now finally they've coexisted for so long that you can actually look at the thing as a working positive model for something that's totally against what Smart Solutions to Homelessness has been advocating for.
Yeah, they've become a tradition, so, you know.
Yeah, so, but what... What I would, where am I going with this?
Well, you're pointing out it's a contradiction that, and also I would think it would tend to give some credibility to, you know, what you've been urging upon the community for the last five years.
I guess what I'm saying is the terrible thing that we're watching constantly, you and I, you especially, is where we look at a city that is actually not a community, but it's a corporation. And it acts like a corporation. And sometimes you think you're talking to the board of directors, but really they're doing the bidding of some other backroom boys club of developers or whoever the fuck. And right now you can't even talk to the city council about what's happening. They voted unanimously to support 20 recommendations that now have been completely dashed for whatever the fuck they're doing now. I know they're trying. Part of the recommendations are a navigation center triage and day program, but this tent encampment thing is totally off the rails. But they have a lock on the game. Whatever they say goes. He writes a blog, you know, Martin Bernal, and that's the sort of the law of the land, and we just all kind of have to suffer through it. What we can constructively do, and what we're doing with the warming center, is just do whatever the fuck we want, as long as we're within the legal grounds to do so. Don Lane said it long ago. You can do it. There's nothing in the city stopping you from doing a sanctuary camp, as long as you get a nonprofit together, get some people to support it, do it on a space where you can legally do it. And so that's kind of what we're up to as a community now, is letting them do whatever they're doing and then trying to build, like that's what the Coalition on Homelessness is hoping to do, is build a third story between, the incarceration model and the strictly, the city does what it wants and all we do is, constantly protest the city. Let's build some things a la Eugene, Oregon, where they don't have a protest community. They have a solutions oriented. They just come together and build things.
Well, it did come out.
I'm not making Santa Cruz wrong, but let's. There's so many smart, inventive people here, and there's so much money. I think we could get together and build some things that would really help the people on the street and circumvent this madness that we're seeing at City Hall.
Well, you know, it's interesting the way you describe it. Although I got to tell you, when I was in Eugene 20 years ago, there was a very active protest community, and that actually I think prompted the first Eugene Safe Parking Program in the mid and late 90s. So I mean, I think, and you've been part of an active protest community, you know, up until you and everybody else involved, or a number of people involved, got trashed in the Santa Cruz 11.
Well, that was the distinction that I make. Occupy Eugene compared to Occupy Santa Cruz. Very similar occupation, very different outcomes. we audaciously took over a building and tried to make an extended statement against banking and saying we were doing it for the homeless population. They made an agreement with the city that they would end their encampment if the city started a Department of Homelessness to meet with the community on solutions. So that's kind of where I decided, you know, when I was making my documentary, learning about that, I was like, okay, then I would like to be the Santa Cruz City Department of Homelessness solution. And so that's kind of where, not smart solutions to homelessness, but everything else.
So what's coming up in the next few days for you as far as not just the warming center, but what's going on out there, you know, among the homeless community generally that you've seen? Because you're spending a lot of your time, much more than I am, outside talking to people, actually helping folks out with supplies, blankets, getting information from folks, and so forth.
Yeah, a lot of what we're doing is receiving calls to our hotline, delivering. A lot of those are giving them the bad news that they need to seek shelter earlier in the day. These 12 a.m. Calls for shelter, just speak to the fact that people aren't taking very good care of themselves. They're not forecasting their day very well. So we give people blankets and coats. What we're working on, thanks for asking, is, you know, we're still designing a new storage program that will be on wheels in a box truck. We're involved in the engineering of that program, and then soon the marketing of it in a way that, you know, how do we fund it, fundraising for it. We've got some various seed money from different locations, and that's been amazing to see the support that showed up after the city, after various people in the community realized that the city wasn't going to go forward with the storage program. People that value that thing and want to see it happen, so there's some support there. Additionally, the question, conversation that we might want to start a microloan program. Imagine all the people with SSI checks that sleep in doorways, that we might be able to start a microloan program to get them into a van or an RV, maybe match them with somebody who has a license. That's something we're talking about. Maybe identifying somebody with an SSI check who's clean and sober, who can get a driver's license, and then forwarding them the money to buy a vehicle, so they can get out of the doorway, something like that. Additionally, drum roll, please. We're still talking about sanctuary-type camps.
I understand.
I'm
going to kind of end this because I want to give you a chance to listen to Malkin on Mills, which
he's on now.
Yeah, it's.
And I have to go. I have another call here. So thank you. Be well.
Hey, you too, man. Thank you. And that was Brent Adams of the Warming Center. You can find him online. You can also give him a call. And the number to call him at, I have right here. And it is 831-234-9848. That's 234-9848. And, of course, this is a pre-recorded interview, but hopefully you found it helpful.